Hello everyone, and welcome to another Walk with Gabriel. It is just about 10 a.m. November 30th, 2024, and I can comfortably say I have hit a major milestone. This morning, I weighed in at 498. That means I am below 500, and I have finally changed the first two numbers on the scale, down from 570-ish, 574 at least, probably five even higher, the more I think about it, and all the way down to below 500. This excites me profoundly. I am so looking forward to what can be done in the last month of this year. I'm also excited for all the progress that can be made throughout 2025. I'm pretty thrilled about how far I've come, all the mobility gains, all the strength I've put on in these last few months has really done me wonders. This kind of walk that I'm attempting would have been a much greater challenge as recently as 4 months ago. And so I have a lot to be grateful for, that's for sure. Today is another one of those days where I'm trying to brave the cold, because sadly, I am way too used to just staying indoors when it's a little chilly, much less actually cold. I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that I would spend too many winters going out really without as much warm clothing as I should have, and there was a lot of discomfort, because when you're as insulated as I am at my size, what ends up happening is if you're cold, you don't really feel cold for a long time because you're more insulated. You can deal with just wearing a hoodie in a pretty cold day. But what you can't put up with is when you're out there long enough that it really starts to seep in. Once it's at the point where you start to feel cold in your bones, it's a different game. Yeah, as you stay out in the cold longer, your body basically absorbs the cold. And basically, if I understand correctly, your fat cells start to get cold. And you really feel it because your body wants to stay warm, but you're like still cold even though you've been inside for an hour after being outside. And it's honestly quite a horrible experience. It's a good reason to never get my size. If you're lacking reasons not to get this big, I can honestly say winter itself is a huge part of it. But anyways, so I kind of dealt with that a little too much, and I kind of developed this aversion to even moderately cold temperatures. Like right now it's only 0 degrees, which really isn't that bad. I really can tough it out. But one of the things I'm learning throughout this process is that most of my barriers to making progress are way more mental than physical. And those mental barriers manifest in very unintuitive ways. For instance, this whole me going out in slightly colder temperatures thing, it's like it wasn't even something I consciously noticed I was avoiding. It was kind of just like, huh, I just don't like going out during winter. So suddenly, oh, why haven't I gone out at all? Suddenly, huh, why am I doing everything I can to avoid going outside when it's cold? So that's a big part of it. And I'm going to be honest, a non-trivial part of it is just the debilitating effects of being unable to overcome discomfort. I feel like once you're like me and spent way too long sliding down that scale, it ends up in a situation where even the slightest discomforts are a huge mental barrier, because it really does paralyze you in a sense. And so one of the things I'm noticing in this entire journey of me really starting to make progress again is that you need to show your body, and most importantly your mind, that you can actually endure these, what I'm going to call micro hardships, because me being outside right now, I'm not suffering. Yes, I'm a little chilly. Yes, I feel the fact that it's not 10 degrees outside, but it's not killing me. It's not going to freeze me up in an instant. It's not a sharp, chilling pain. It's not like somebody's holding ice to my skin or anything like that. And so this is a part of my hope to really toughen up this winter. I mean, if anything else, if I can just get better at being more active in the cold this winter, regardless of where the scale goes, that'll be a huge major milestone, because it'll get me to the point where it's like, oh, springtime rolls around and I can put up with much more difficulty and frustration. And I think that's really the trick, because I can admit, I really have no idea how hard I can push myself. Like even yesterday at my personal training session, he had me do something where I'm like pushing this sled with like weights on it, and I had to kind of go as fast as I can, walk between intervals, then go push it, you know, another 100 meters as fast as I can. And that was incredibly difficult. But the fact of the matter is, I did it. And I'm at the point now where I'm realizing, I'm like, hot damn, that's not something I would have even guessed I would have even been able to do now, much less, you know, months ago before I'd even started this journey. And so the thing I'm grateful for, and the thing I'm really putting together now, is that, like, no matter how far gone your body really is, there's always like a lot of places. For instance, I did not know my situation was as salvageable as it clearly was. I feel like I have now been returned to the path where it feels achievable again, because I spent many years, honestly, thinking all of this was entirely outside my control. And again, most of those limitations were all in my head. But I still have a long way to go. That's for sure. I've got, if I'm 499, I mean, I need to at least get down below 299, so that's 200 pounds, and at least another 50, who knows how much more. I mean, I have no idea what low percentage of body fat I'm aiming for. Right now, I'm at 55% body fat as a rough estimate, and I don't know, getting down to 15 would be pretty nice. And so I've got at least 250 pounds to go, but I am very excited. I feel like this process has all been going remarkably well. It's hard, it's challenging. Me being sick this last week has really made it even harder. I mean, the fact of dealing with being sore, hungry, and sick was like this triple whammy that absolutely nuked my emotional state. Even now, I'm like 90% better, but I can still feel that like last 10% holding on. I'll look forward when I'm actually out in the clear, but this is me doing my best to really just get out there and do a walk and actually push forward. Because I really, really, really want to lose this weight as fast as I can. Not in like an unsustainable and crazy way, but like in as quickly as I can maintain on the way down. Because it's a long journey, so I don't want to waste time, but I also don't want to set up myself for failure. I will say, I think that's a big part of the problem in my dire circumstances, that the sad truth of the matter is that wasting time is its own form of self-sabotage. For instance, lots of people will talk about having a cheat day. Thankfully, beyond like having slightly more calories than I would plan to otherwise, I don't really engage in that. You know, it's like I'll eat up to what I'm guessing is maintenance. It's kind of hard to get good figures on that at my size, but even like what's textbook maintenance is probably quite high, so I'm like not even counting exercise towards that. But anyways, I think cheat days, if you don't need them, if you don't need to stuff yourself one day a week just to keep at it, or one day a month, or whatever your cadence is, why why make things harder for yourself? You're just making it harder to have a bigger calorie deficit over time. You're introducing more complexity, more complicated signals to your body. If the goal is consistency, my mindset is very much I need to work on the consistency angle, which is where a big part of my focus has been about habits. What can I do to make myself better at doing this process? Because actually, I came across this really remarkable video that's in my motivational memes folder that you can access on my website, where I explain, where she explains that if you're shaming someone, or like a seed, because she's making a comparison to a seed, that like seeds are made to grow, in her words. And so what makes seeds grow is the right environment plus time. So it's not like anybody's putting a seed in a pot and not watering it and be like, oh my goodness, this is a horrible seed. How dare this seed not grow? It's the problem. And she says, no, you have to ensure that it's getting enough sunlight, that it's getting enough water, that maybe the temperature's right, whatever it is. And then if it has all that, you just patiently wait, and then the seed will grow. That's how these things work. And so she argues that people are made to grow. If you are not growing, if you are stagnant, if you are frustrated at being stuck in the same pattern over and over again, you have to ask yourself, what is it in your lifestyle situation that's preventing you from actually, you know, making the changes you want or escaping the cycle you're trapped in? And the thing that I kind of reflected on this is that what makes the where the shaming kind of comes into the place is that people intuitively recognize that you can change your own environment. You can, you know, reorganize your house. You can acquire, you know, home gym equipment. You can change what you do in a day. There's a lot of things. But I think it's a learned helplessness that really gets people down. And so I think what ends up happening is there are people like me who become so stuck in these cycles that you forget you can change your environment, even radically so. Something as simple as me going to the pool, like that was my first step, going swimming on a regular basis, that was a big change in my environment. Suddenly I was going from no activity to not a huge amount of activity. I only recently started swimming laps. It was kind of more of a like half the battle was getting there. Like I was really, really out of shape. And I say this as somebody who still considered extremely out of shape, but by most people's standards. But anyways, so the point of her explanation is that if you don't have what you need to grow, she kind of says don't worry about it, which I kind of have a different twist on this, which is you need to recognize the things that you need to grow that you don't have. Now, if you're incapable of getting those things, then yeah, don't torture yourself. Just realize those are the obstacles to what you need, and then work on those obstacles. Which for me was really helpful when I read Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety by Peter Bragan, where he was explaining the emotional patterns I was stuck in. And it has a lot to do with this whole fight, but I'm sure other people have other different things structurally preventing them from making the kind of progress they want. For instance, I have a twin brother who kind of struggles with getting fast food during the days at work. And so the challenge he was running into is that he didn't really have time to make meals and lunches and all that nonsense. And so he would be dependent on fast food because there's really not too much healthy food around to go, especially because he's working a job, you know, where you're driving around the town doing different things. And so one of the things he started doing was he started having these like meal replacement protein shakes available, because simply introducing those to his environment made him less likely to have fast food. And the point I'm trying to make is that you can structurally reorganize your life to reduce the bad habits or cycles you're stuck in. And it's such an important part of the approach, because I think many people want to depend entirely on willpower. And what's funny is many of the weight loss forums I read and participate in basically make it sound like willpower does not exist. Willpower is a myth. If you're counting on your willpower, you will fail. And I think a lot of this comes from people's lived experience of being this big, or even not as big, and actually going down. And part of it has to do with this idea. I'm not sure how much I take it seriously, but there's this idea of decision fatigue. So you wake up, and so imagine you keep some candy on your kitchen table to build your willpower. So you have this candy on your dining room table, and then you also have your pots and pans ready to go so you can cook yourself a healthy meal at breakfast. So you're waking up at the time where this is a choice you can make. You can choose between cooking yourself a high agency, high effort, high rewarding meal, or you can just eat some candy. If that was the scenario every day somebody woke up with, what decision do you think they would end up making more often over time? I would bet that anyone, at least with my inclinations, would end up towards the candy. But the thing is the idea of decision fatigue is that person who has to make that decision in the morning has less decision points for the rest of the day. So they, you know, take the willpower to cook themselves a healthy meal as opposed to taking the easy option. And then what ends up happening is later in the day, they're like, oh, I'd like to work out after work, but you know, I'd rather just finish watching this documentary at my desk and then I'll go home after and sleep. And so they're faced with another decision that, let's just say, is just as costly in decision points to make the right option. The assumption behind the decision fatigue idea is that the more difficult decisions you make during a day, the more that taxes you, the harder it is for you to choose the right thing. And so I don't know how seriously I take this idea, but I think as a general rule, maybe the things you want to do during the day should be the easy option. Don't put things in your life that sabotage you, that make it hard. Don't put things in your life that sabotage you and get in the way of the habits you're trying to form. In fact, it's really easy to acquire things that make all the kinds of things you're trying to do easier. If you're somebody who's, sticking with the example, unable to make, you know, good meals for yourself on the regular in the mornings, maybe you want to have some kind of healthy breakfast prepared the night before. Maybe you want to go as far as to meal prep by having a lot of, you know, plastic wrap or Tupperware so that you can prepare a lot of something and then meter that out throughout the week. There's lots of options. I will say today is a surprisingly nice day out. The skies were all gray when I left, and now I'm starting to see the clouds parting for a nice blue sky. The sun was in my eyes earlier during this walk, but I'm just really happy at how all this is going. I've really challenged myself today by walking right in the morning, which I think is a pretty good way of starting your day. I will say on the days where I walk first thing, absolutely makes a huge difference. And so I would say if you're anyone like me who's struggling, I'd highly recommend it. But do I want to walk longer or do I want to just come home? I think I'm going to push a bit further just because I really do want to burn those extra calories. Walking is such a challenge. Right now I'm going uphill and oh my goodness, I feel it. Oh, I mean, that's the rub, is I'm noticing the more active I become and the harder I'm able to push myself, the harder the recovery days end up being. Because for the first few weeks of personal training, I would do basically nothing just to recover from the training. But it's like now I'm trying to push even further than just the personal training. And it takes a lot out of me. It really does. Oh, this steep hill is a lot. But I'm so happy, very incredibly happy, to be down below 500. Shockingly, I'm sure once I get down to 400, I'm gonna feel downright normal in some ways. I mean, it's been a long time since I've even been that slim, as shocking as that sounds. And I mean, that's the problem with this slow, gradual, you know, increase of weight over time. I'm really excited to, you know, live better than I ever have. Once I'm a healthy weight, it will have been so long. Like, honestly, my entire adult life, I've been overweight. And so if I can get down to a healthy, ideal, or optimal weight, then I'm at the point where literally I'll be in the best shape of my adult life. And that's crazy to think about. And what's even crazier to think about is I came across this YouTube channel. Forgive me, I'll have to include it in the notes here, but I think it's called Mover's Odyssey. It's some kind of like bodybuilding, weightlifting, fitness channel where they explain all the kinds of various benefits of certain exercises. I found them because I hated doing kettlebell swings, but I wanted, you know, I'm the kind of person where I'm like, I feel this way, but I want to challenge this assumption. So after a personal training session where I did a lot of those and felt horrible, I'm like, okay, but what am I getting out of this? And they explained that kettlebell swings work your entire posterior chain, which is all the muscles behind you, and it does an incredible amount of good for all the parts of your general athletic ability. They even reference something called the what the hell effect, where like so many of the benefits from even just kettlebell swings are like unintuitively positive. Things that like you wouldn't assume would happen. He mentioned getting better at pull-ups materialized after working on this. And so it can really make a huge difference. But what was most interesting was going through the videos, learning all these neat little tips. For instance, one of the things they recommended was rested squats. You do a squat down to the bottom and you just rest there because it's a natural human resting position. And reading through the comments of that and other videos on their channel, you had a lot of people saying things like, I'm 60 years old, but I feel so much better after doing this. And I think there's this really bizarre illusion created right now where people have no idea how much better their lifestyle can be. Like, for instance, I had no idea I could be this able at this size. I assumed I was going to have to lose another 100 pounds before I even began to become mobile again. But here I am, able to do an hour walk, able to do my personal training sessions, able to at least cook for myself. All of these things were huge barriers. Even the idea of just standing still for a few minutes was itself a major challenge. And so I have a feeling that even people who aren't obese, like I am, have many similar problems, in the sense that with a little bit of exercise or building up various muscular strength in their body, they have no idea how within reach very basic but phenomenal and impactful improvements in quality of life can be. One of the things I'm learning is just how many basic muscle problems manifest into things that people kind of consider incurable. For instance, your knees. I, for a long time, understood knees as things that's like, oh, you have a finite amount of knee endurance, and once you wear that out, it's gone. Which, as far as I'm aware, is still pretty much true. But if you're somebody who's 50% gone, and you're having all these pains and aches and whatever, but if you actually strengthen the muscles around your legs, your feet, your ankles, everything supporting that knee and above it, you would be surprised at how much weight is relieved on those knees and can give you a remarkable improvement. And so it's funny that, you know, for instance, my mother has knee problems, and that's kind of why this is close to heart, is that, you know, most of the advice she's been given is lose weight, which, you know, it's been over a decade since she was given that advice, and really, I would almost go the opposite direction. I would say, no, you need to get stronger. Now, obviously, you don't want to, like, gorge yourself just to gain weight for the sake of it, but truthfully, if you strengthen your legs, if you strengthen your entire, you know, mobility structure, I myself have experienced phenomenal benefits from that, but I'm sure somebody who's closer to a normal body weight would benefit even way more, because you don't need as much strength to hold up a normal sized body than my just under 500 pound behemoth. And part of what's kind of driving all this is that when your body notices it's missing something, this is another thing I've learned recently, is to say your glute muscles, your butt muscles, are not very strong, your body will compensate for that in so many different ways. And so to me, optimal, you know, muscular health is not just about being able to do basic tasks, but being strong enough in the areas that you are doing those tasks in a biomechanically advantageous way. And I think for many people, that's profoundly out of reach. And I think for many people, they have no idea how within reach it actually is, but it feels so profoundly out of reach. In fact, the biggest way something can be out of reach is by simply not being aware of it. And I tell you, as for like my final rant in this entire discussion, is that I have learned a lot about health post the COVID years. I'm not claiming to be some kind of expert. I am acutely aware of how much more I need to learn to really have a mastery grasp of it. But what was blatantly obvious to me when the COVID crisis first struck was that myself and pretty much everyone is horribly misinformed about health. Now I thought I was an outlier. I thought, oh, well, I'm the only super obese person I know. There must be something uniquely wrong with my understanding, and everybody else understands their shit, right? Like, I should be able to talk to somebody who's a normal body weight and then be able to explain, you know, understanding human health at a high level. But the fact of the matter is, very few people spend really that much time thinking about health. To many people, I would say they think about their health in the way most people think of that beater car they drive around. They don't really want to look under the hood until that check engine light forces them to. And so, when it comes to understanding the nuances of personal health, one of the things that's come to my attention is that somebody like Dennis Rancourt has given many talks about basically how the human dominance hierarchy weaponizes health against people. Now, that's a huge topic, which I'm not really going to be able to do justice, but be it to say that it's intuitively obvious to people why wealthier people have better access to higher quality health and poorer people have less access to really maximize their health situation. Now, Jay Bhattacharya, the new National Institute of Health appointee under the new incoming Trump administration, I actually listened to him a lot in the last few years because he was a fringe epidemiologist talking about why lockdowns were the worst thing ever. And he's spoken quite a lot about it. But the thing I want to zero in here is he talks about the social determinants of health. These are what, like, your average public health employee would understand about how the big government stats like job losses and community involvement and all those, like, super zoomed out figures, how they affect people's actual real lives. And he said something crazy, like, for every 1% unemployment goes up, like, mortality, as in people suffering and dying, goes up quite a bit. And that's just one of his pieces of information he dropped that, like, oh, I get it now. I finally understand why these shocks are so painful to people. And that's just a small part of the overall picture. And so, in my mind, the biggest sin of the COVID years by the entire bureaucratic intellectual class is they reduced everybody's idea of health to literally, do you have a virus? Yes or no? Do you have this weird injection we're forcing on everyone? Yes or no? And the truth of the matter is, ain't nobody talking about exercise. Ain't nobody talking about getting enough sunlight. In fact, children's parks were fenced off during the absolutely deranged lockdown era. And some places were so deranged that they even made sure to fly a helicopter to people out in the middle of nowhere to make sure they weren't away from the rest of society. And to go even further, there were all these beaches that were shut down. Which obviously, it's funny how poorly those decisions have aged. But I'm not trying to make this about the COVID years. I've spent a long time talking about those. But my point fundamentally is that health for an individual human being is far beyond nutrition, but nutrition isn't a very important part of it. It's far beyond exercise, but exercise is a very important part of it. It's far beyond your social life, but your social life is a very important part of it. It's far beyond what you're doing with your life, but that's an important part of it. And so it's very hard for me these days, where I just gave a roundtable discussion with my friend Liam and Michael Caine about how I'm worried that some of the health reforms going on, hopefully under Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the new Trump administration, I am concerned that they're always being pushed as, like, oh, this will help us fix military recruitment. Because to me, there is a dark side of health. And this is one of those things that I think everybody should have learned from the COVID years. no matter what side you were on the pandemic, no matter what side you were on the shots, in my opinion, what you should have learned from those years is that health is a very personal endeavor. You have one body. In most circumstances outside of pregnancy, you're not really sharing it with anyone else. And so your responsibility follows to yourself. And nobody else is answerable for your situation of health. If you get screwed over by some company or some product or some situation, generally, they're not going to come bail you out. And even if they can, the money very often cannot buy you back the pre-damaged state of whatever. And so, what this actually means is that I'm concerned about any initiative that is trying to radically transform health from the top down. Because while it's very good that people in the States are seriously interested in tackling obesity, especially in the youth, as somebody who is like so profoundly aware of the harms, the toils, and the setbacks from severe obesity, I think that's an amazing and wonderful thing. But there's a dark side to this. Because first of all, it's not just obesity they're trying to tackle. But let's just zoom in on this. There are ways you can solve problems in a actually holistic, you know, taking the broad view approach that has compassion, that actually makes things better. Or there is the we are fixing you approach that is always tyrannical, will always cut ethical corners, and will always create situations that will inevitably hurt the person in the long run. For instance, if America felt that obesity needed to be fixed overnight, what they could do is they could put, 200 million obese Americans into fat camps where they would be medically starved and forced to do some form of resistance training. Congratulations, if you didn't mind destroying the economy like lockdowns did. Let's be honest, how much worse is it really than what we did during the COVID years? You could take that many people and force them to change rapidly. Most people will not seriously entertain this idea because despite what people's behavior during the COVID years would tell you, people still have some nominal preferences towards individual autonomy. Thankfully. I wish it was a little more, but hey, at least it's somewhere. So okay, you can't go that far. So right now, there is this massive push for Ozempic. Ozempic is a part of a class of drugs called GLP-1 agonists or whatever. And how they work is that basically they signal to your body, you're not that hungry anymore. I don't know how complicated this gets, but the basic idea is you take the injection, you don't feel as hungry, it may balance your blood sugar, and that will help you withstand extremely high calorie deficits. So then you can just take your daily shot, eat nothing or next to nothing, lose lots of weight quickly, everybody's better off, right? Well, unfortunately, there are downsides to this approach. Because again, you need to zoom out. You need to have the broad view of these things. Because if you care about an individual person and not just a number on their scale, you have to realize that if you take somebody who's pretty overweight, make them emaciate themselves by taking a drug that allows them to eat basically no nutrition, you can end up with somebody who's, say, lower on the scale, but now actually severely damaged. I assume, at least at the moment, anyone actually using these drugs is at least in some form medically supervised. The doctor will be like, hey, make sure you're still eating enough. Hey, make sure you're at least going for walks. But that may or may not actually be sufficient towards actually ensuring they come out of that transformation on the other side better than they were before. to say nothing of the concerns that these drugs may or may not impact somebody's ability to lose weight after the fact. So it's one of those typical pharma scams where it's like, oh yes, this helps you, but oh, you also need to be on this for life. Now, I don't feel like I get to pontificate that much on the weight loss fight, because I've really only just begun. I've lost 75 pounds, which is great, but I have a long heckin' way to go. I cannot say I've cured my food addiction. I cannot say I figured everything out, and that's not what I'm trying to say here. However, in my personal experience, I strongly feel that there are actually keys to any individual person reducing their lifestyle behaviors that are absolutely hurting them without drugs. I wholeheartedly believe that anyone, no matter how addicted they are to food, no matter how much they emotionally overeat, I am wholeheartedly 100% behind the idea that there are things they can do to fix that. Now, is that the same as saying it'll happen in 100% of the cases on the timelines people want? Absolutely not. No, I am not promising anyone an easy way to a better lifestyle. It is fucking hard. I am not even saying that it's something most people can do. I am merely asserting that it is possible, and I feel very strong about that in the sense that it is possible for every single person. And so that's a fairly nuanced point. Going back to the main concern here is that, as I've just outlined, there are ways you could improve, quote unquote improve, one measurable parts of somebody's health while doing damage in many other areas. And so when I see these top-down health initiatives, oh, we gotta make sure we can have, you know, military recruits again, I'm very concerned about ethical and even health and scientific corners being cut in some pretty egregious ways. And so, if nothing else, for anyone bothering to listen at this point, what I would highly recommend is that if you're in the States, because this is where this really matters, but also applies to other NATO countries as well, and people throughout the world, if you have somebody who is in the situation where they radically need to change their lifestyle, the answer should be some form of offering some kind of support. Because I can tell you, I could not have reversed my situation without the support I have from loved ones, and even encouragement of strangers on the internet. You would be surprised at how encouraging and propelling just really small basic gestures like that can be. And so, if you have a loved one who is overweight, who is struggling, as gently as you can, because it's always hard to have these conversations, tell them that they can change their situation. They're going to feel, and I know this from experience, they're going to feel like you just don't understand their situation. Because maybe you don't. Maybe I can't do enough through these blogs and updates to explain to you all the inner turmoil of that spiraling despair of guilt and shame and frustration over gaining weight and not knowing what to do about it. It's a very hard place to be. And so I will admit, as a heavy person, when somebody who is a normal weight says, hey, you should like go for walks and stuff, and like you drop that little piece of advice and hopes they'll take up on it, in my opinion, that doesn't really help. If you have the bandwidth for it, I would say offer some form of support. So for instance, instead of telling that person, oh, go for a walk, you know, go tell your nephew, go tell your, you know, relative, your brother, whatever, be like, oh, go for walks more. Invite them to join you on walks. Say you drive to their place, or you go meet them, and then you walk around the block with them, and then you can have a conversation about their health and why they feel stuck in it, and you get them to identify all the things that are in the way of them actually making progress, and then you'll have a better idea on where things need to go from there, and so will they. And then they will be in the driver's seat of those decisions, and they'll be better able to make that progress. And so what I'm really advocating here is that helping somebody with this whole horrible obesity problem is not a quick fix. You kind of can't just tell somebody, oh, eat keto and everything will be fine. That's kind of what everybody wants to do. And to be honest, I've had good luck under keto. I lost 80 pounds at one point off keto in the past. But I do think you need to zoom out a bit more than just do this one thing. And I think it does have to come from a place of compassion. Because many people who are severely overweight, and I can raise my hand to this myself, is that when you are gaining weight, eventually you do kind of just give up. You kind of feel like it's hopeless. I've certainly felt like it was not only hopeless, but I honestly believed it was impossible to change my eating habits. Now, I already have. I've already made remarkable progress, but I still understand what it felt like when I couldn't honestly believe that change was possible. And so you would be surprised at how much of a benefit it is to show one of your relatives who's struggling, or loved ones who are struggling with this kind of thing, that you care and that you're willing to spend the time and effort to help them in some small way. You would be very surprised at how much of a difference something like that will make. Now, yes, I understand everybody's super busy. Everybody's bogged down with their own stuff. So I'm not telling you you should abandon your entire life just to fix all your loved ones. But I am saying, if you're serious about it, that's what I think would do the most good. If you take somebody who is struggling with this stuff under their wing, go on an adventure together of learning about health together and how you can both improve, you would be shocked at how quickly both of you experience remarkable health benefits and how much you're able to help them and help yourself in that process. And so that's really it for my whole shindig walk rant. Thank you for joining me, and I hope you have a great one.